this morning. It is May the 30th. It is Memorial Day weekend. For those who are maybe here or maybe visiting because of that, I don't know. But I hope you all have a good weekend this weekend so far. And I guess it's the so-called beginning of summer, but I don't know how we got that. I think that was determined more by people opening pools than people who measure the sun and the stars. So I am continuing with this series, which is a series that won't seem to end. I'm forcing it. I've set myself 2 more weeks and I'm done with it. I've enjoyed it, but it needs to complete. So I will finish up in 2 weeks. And then we may all end up discussing it. All the other 4 elders of mine with me are going to probably present something of their own at that point right after that. So, for a week. So anyway, like I said, good to see everybody. We'll get started. Are there any thoughts or questions I need to address first? Good. I like to cause trouble later. I just realized I sent these charts in. I nearly always send them in around 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. So I just realized, I double checked them this morning, that I have almost no charts, and usually means I'm going to rely on my ability to ramble, which can work. So I have just a few things. One of the reasons I don't have many charts is because we're in a place where there's almost no verses. You know, we have stepped into the world of opinion. We don't have opinions in churches. No, sure we do. You remember the great verse where 2 people are gathered, 3 opinions will be formed. So, yes, we certainly do have them. Some opinions turn into dogma. And those are the problematic ones. Some are just different perspectives. Email address, text if you want to do so. If you do send me something, if you have not, when if you send me something, I will eventually answer it. But I always record into either my Outlook contacts or my phone your numbers, so I'll remember who you are. And if you've not sent me something and you do send me something and you don't put your name on it, there's a good chance I think you're trying to sell me insurance. Okay. And then I don't respond. All right, so this is where I left off last week. And these are my ideas. This is what I think, which is by definition what I think. I believe it to be true because I believe everything I believe to be true. If I didn't believe it is true, then why would I believe it, right? So I do. I think it's true. I think it's correct. But I am not convinced that it can't be modified. And so I've come to this conclusion. And I've come to this conclusion, this first bullet, about actually a lot of things. I do not believe that Scripture gives us an absolute correct leadership structure for the church. All right. I'll just leave it. How about that one? We'll just start right there. So, except, with these 2 exceptions that I've noticed, that Jesus is the unequivocal head. Okay? And so we all say that because it'd be dumb not to say that, right? It's one of those things, it's like saying, you know, I'm not perfect. Well, I've heard people, I've said, you know, you shouldn't be doing that, and their claim is, I'm not perfect. I never said you were. I never for a moment thought you were. Okay? So why are we stating, it's like saying, I have 2 arms. I know you have 2 arms. That's not relevant. Okay? So except we all say this, right? We all believe it. There's not a Christian organization in the world, probably, that doesn't say that. But what's it mean, right? And that's where the differences begin to form. So I believe it because, one, I have to say that, right? But I actually believe it. and what it means and what's its impact and how that gets translated into action, well, that's something different. And the second thing is that I believe that no man or group of men or group of people is given Jesus' role, even at the local level. Okay? So we have to absorb that one for a minute. That has lots of meaning, has lots of potential impact. It's one of those things that sounds really easy to agree with. And then when we go on to implement it, well, I don't know so, right? This is my point from last week. Restoration of the first century church is unreasonable. Okay? So part of the churches of Christ, I'm not really here to preach Church of Christ, but it is our culture and our background. Part of its mantra is to return to the first century and do things the first century church way. No, that's not good. We're not the first century church. We're not going to be the first century church, and we don't need to be. And if I recall, nearly all the New Testament was written because the first century church was askew. Okay? Most of the epistles were written to first century churches that had big time problems. I don't know that we want to duplicate living with your mother-in-law, right? I don't think we want to duplicate that. They did it. I don't think they want to worship various apostles separately. I don't think we want to do that. They did it. They did all kinds of crazy things. So why do we want to do that? But this idea that we want to go back to me is unreasonable. One, we can't. And two, if we could, we shouldn't. We should be Jesus' ambassadors in our time and in our place. Not conforming to the world, but always seeking to conform to the authority, which is Jesus, which is the Word Himself. Because Jesus is the Word, and they are one and the same. That was my points from last week. So we'll start from there, and we'll work our way from there. So in order for me to have this conversation with you, sometimes, you know, I've learned that definitions are usually the first thing that causes confusion in communication. I think something means something, and you know the same word, but you think it means something different. So I'm now, for the purposes of this discussion, I want to give you definitions that I'm going to use, okay? And so to not only help it, I've decided to all capitalize the word church, okay? So when you see in the charts, all capped, I am talking about this definition. And I was amazed at how hard it was for me to write a definition without going to some source. I didn't. This is my definition. The entire set of people who have committed themselves to following Jesus by dying to their old selves. I know that's probably incomplete and insufficient, but there's also part of me saying, you know what I mean, okay? This is the global worldwide church, okay? And so I'm going to, if I can be consistent with my own self, the rest of this class, when I say church, I'm going to be referring to the whole thing. Okay? And this church has metaphors, symbols, that are used by various New Testament writers. The church is referred to as a bride, the bride of Christ, where Christ is the head, the husband. The church is the bride, is the woman. Okay? And so it's also referred to as a body, a physical body. The entire church is referred to as a body, and that body is made up of parts, and that body has a purpose and a function, but the hand is different from the foot, and it's different from the eye, and you need them all, right, to work. They all have value, they're all important, but they are made up of different parts, and so we understand these. And so one thing, I can't say if I want to poke ahead to next week. Man, why not? So in a bride metaphor, you can convert that to woman, all right? For the sake of this discussion, let's convert that to woman. And in a living couple, what is the primary function? What is the function of woman that man cannot do? Birth children and and multitask. I'm not so sure that's in my translation, but I am pretty convinced that that is a correct statement. Okay? They're the means by which children are brought into the world. Is that fair? And they have, and this is my delicate nature, they have the capacity to sustain them. Okay? Is that delicate? I have a gentle spirit. They can feed them, right? And so we understand that, right? That's just good old-fashioned biology. But in a metaphor of a church, think about what that means. It is the means by which God said he was going to grow his children via the church, not with the church's authority, but with the church. And it's the church's responsibility to feed those babies. And especially, and we have babies. Okay, we have a lot of babies in this congregation. And they could be in their 50s, right? But if they're spiritually new, they're babies. And what do we give babies? You know, we give babies milk, right? And we have to find a way to feed these babies and these young ones. So when you read, there's a couple of times in Scripture, and I should have written them down, I'll get to them next week. There's a couple of times that we talk about milk, and one of them's kind of used in a negative way, right? You should be on meat, and you're still needing milk. That's not a condemnation of milk. It's a condemnation of those who won't grow up, okay? So milk is not bad. Milk is good. And so we want to make sure that we feed all our children, okay? Some of them can take meat, and some of them can't. If you put out meat before a bunch of babies, you kill your babies, okay? Is that correct? So we'll talk about that next week. Church, all caps, the whole thing. Got it? Now, congregation, or the local church, if you prefer that. It's a subset of the church. I almost use mathematical notations, but about half of you would like it, and half of them wouldn't speak to me again. A subset of the church typically associated with a geographic location or locality. Okay? A place. The church at Ephesus. Right? You see terms like that in the New Testament. So there is a church. It is at the location Ephesus. Okay? And he talks to them differently. The second thing about a congregation that I think is a little bit different is it has a higher degree of personal and internal interaction. Right? So when we're spurring on each other to love and good works, what that probably is talking about at the local level. Yes, I want to spur on love and good works to our brothers in Montana, right? Because they're all part of the church, right? But the reality is, it's at the local level. That doesn't mean there's not a relationship between congregations, but it does mean, and so for the purpose of this, when I'm talking about congregation, the central church is a congregation. It has a location. 407 East Clinton, I think. I think that's what it is. I should know that, shouldn't I? Anyway, so there is that. And the set of all the congregations is equal to the church. All right, so there we go. If you're in a congregation, you're a part of the church. Okay, from a Christian principle perspective, I'm getting almost philosophical here, and just have to just breathe deep. We'll get there. from a Christian principle perspective, the two, church and congregation, are synonymous. Okay? They are both brides. They are both complete bodies. So when we talk about the church as a body, I could talk about global church. I don't know why I have to wave my arms every time I say that. I need to correct that. Greg, or you like that. I'll keep going. So whenever we are talking about that, it is a complete body, but also this group of 300 that meet here is also a complete body. Okay? And so when you read New Testament terminology, it can be really difficult to distinguish between the two, because they are one and the same in that sense. Okay? So now that I've muddied the water, let's try one more chart. And this is something, if you can look ahead and see where I'm going, just calm down. Okay? But Scripture says, and Scripture describes various relationships between congregations. Okay? Number one, the church that meets at Antioch sent Paul and Barnabas out. They sent them out. Did they coordinate with the church in Jerusalem? I don't know. But the church at Antioch sent Paul and Barnabas. We traditionally call it the first missionary journey, and they would, well, actually after one, they got into an argument, and so that ended that. So then Paul went into others, but they sent them out. They made the decision to go build and start more churches, or at least to spread the word, spread the message that would ultimately lead to new churches, new congregations. Ah, see, I already made my own mistake. New congregations. Okay? In Acts 15, Antioch sent a delegation to Jerusalem to discuss an issue. Okay? So then we have two congregations interacting. The odd thing about this one, and it makes it particularly challenging, and we have to be careful with it because of this, Jerusalem contained all the apostles. So were they really going to a congregation, or are they really going to the apostles? My guess is they were going to the apostles. Okay? So that's not quite as clean, but they do have relationships. And then in 1 Corinthians 16, here Paul is, he's somewhere in Europe. He's on his way back, sends a letter to the Corinthians, and he says to gather money on the first day. This is one of those that became a law, became a command. It really wasn't. It just says, hey, I'm on my way through. When you get together, collect money, so when I come through, I can get that money, and I'm taking it to support the church in Jerusalem, who I think was under a famine. And he also told the Galatians to do the same thing. Okay, so now this congregation, Corinth, and the congregation at Galatia are now sending support to support their brothers and sisters in the congregation in Jerusalem. So there are interactions between congregations. Okay? So I bring this up for a reason. And so we got to get there, so let's just go there. The scriptural structure. Now I'm going to say this. This is what I understand. You can disagree and we can talk. And I am interested in getting it better understood. Scripture gives us almost no definition about how the church or the congregation is organized beyond this. And I said this at the beginning, that Jesus is the head. But one thing we see by example, the church and the congregations in their human leadership, they're always in multiples. Okay? At the big church level, it's the apostles. There are 12 of them. Okay? And so there's always 12. Well, we're going to talk about that too. There's 12. And they become almost the head of the capital C church. Okay? And then when they have local or congregational levels, they're always described as elders. And they're always described in the plural. Not one case in Scripture do we ever see a number. We don't. Just none. 2, 3, 5, 40. We just don't know. but it is always plural. And so what I think I've, here it is. Here's capital C. Right? So this is the way I see it. And I don't know if this drawing's any good. This is why engineers shouldn't do graphics. But Jesus is at the top with all authority. And you see multiple apostles, in this case 12, and they are surrounded by a box, which to me means they are a group together. Okay? I don't know if that graphic shows that or not, but I think that is pretty consistent. So a little trivia quiz here. All right, how many apostles' death are described in the New Testament? Do you know? How many are actually described as happening? One and two. Who are the two? Judas Iscariot is an apostle. Okay? We often forget him. And James, the brother of John, the son of Zebedee. What's actually, to me, as a kind of a history buff, is it's just how amazingly short the description of James's death is. It's half a sentence. And he had them run through. And that was it. And James, who was at the Transfiguration, James, who was the inner circle of Jesus, is gone. Right? No carrying on, no bellowing, no, just gone. Run through. I assume that's spear or sword, right? And he's gone. And with Judas, we have an interesting event. And with Judas, Judas was replaced. Okay, Acts. We talked about that a few weeks ago. Judas was specifically replaced. Their goal was to get to 12. So to them, 12 was the number to have. And we talked about that. But with James, nothing. Right? So was James replaced? And the answer is, I don't think so. Okay? No description of it, no reason to think it, no implication, no inference. Now we have 11. Okay? And so when you think of the head of the church, we lost one of our apostles. We would also pick one up a few chapters later, right? We would add Paul, but did Paul replace James? It was never stated that way. Or that he would become the 12, but Barnabas is described as an apostle, so it gets kind of weird. But that's where it ends. What's interesting to me is that the congregational level, IMO, is that what you cool people call, in my opinion? I haven't learned to speak text yet. I still do crazy things like writing full sentences. I know I'm old-fashioned. So when you talk about the congregations, the local congregations themselves, I said they're described in leaders. The elders are described as the leaders. There's always described in plural, but never a number ever is given in any case. I have, because I like mathematics, 1 to n, right? Where n is greater than or equal to 2, okay? So much easier if you let me just do notation. I don't need all the charts. But there are multiple, and you see a very similar arrangement with the apostolic level, and that you have a box. There's not one elder. There's not a chief elder. They're always described in groups. And I think, this is where my opinion really comes. I think it's intentional. Scripture gives absolutely no justification or reasoning for it. Absolutely none. If it's there, please show it to me. I can only speculate as the reason. And so, this is why I get nervous about class. As a Bible teacher, I like to teach a Bible. But sometimes we have to just be candid about what we believe and what we don't believe. Why I think is that I think it's good to have multiple views. The elder's responsibility, his prime responsibility, is the protection of the congregation by ensuring that the doctrine, the teaching is all reliable. The people that need it, get it. The people that need encouragement, advice, get it. It is at their core the care of the congregation, shepherds. So what's that mean? And so you notice that there is nobody between the congregation level and Jesus anymore, because all the apostles are dead. And so what that leads us to is this question. And if you want to know the divisions of the entire Christian church all will line up on these questions. Are the apostles replaced in role and function? Judas was replaced. So we have a scriptural indication that that might be yes. Was James replaced? No indication that he was. Doesn't, of course, he might have been. Were any of the others replaced when they passed away? I don't know. So the question is there a structure of the church, capital C, church, that's still intact? Or is this church structure replicated at the congregation? And this is where I think things get shady. Okay? Because you know as well as I do that the majority of the Christian world believes that there is a structure sitting in between Jesus and the local congregations. Okay? Can I say for sure that that's not valid? No. Because you know what I mean when I say that the church gives us almost no definition? It means this. This is tricky. It means it gives us almost no definition. Okay? Therefore, to say that it must be this way or it cannot be that way is dangerous ground to walk on. Okay? So let's just be honest. So the churches of Christ have historically refused to have a middle structure. Okay? Catholic Church certainly does. And most every high church out of Europe did and does. And then in the Restoration, they had those discussions, right? About how are we going to coordinate, how is the big C church going to coordinate missions with all the little C congregations? How are you going to maintain the message? How are you going to maintain a consistent teaching? How are you going to do all that? And just to be blunt, the churches of Christ were all Westerners, and somewhat, well, I say, that's on this side of the Appalachian Mountains, right? Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana. They were independent. They just didn't like it. They liked to be independent. And so our heritage is independent congregations. Is that the right way or the wrong way? It's a way. So this is why I do get concerned, though. And so if you're not, I've made up this term. It can have multiple other names. There is a priest-laity model of congregational leadership. And let me tell you, if you remember back, I actually talked about this several weeks ago. I think that maybe I have a reason to teach something, but I'm usually holding it to bring it back up later. So if you look at my class number 6, April the 4th charts, okay, Pope Innocent the 3rd, remember that guy? Action figure and all, remember him? This was one of the first places that it was fully implemented. And the idea was that that the structure of the Jesus and the apostles was maintained. Even after all the apostles died, it was replaced with others. But what they did that was different was insert a single person at the top, not a group of people. Okay? We know him as the Pope. And so once the Pope got there, he became a single person. And then he would manage, he would have a staff, and he would manage others, and they would develop new congregations. And all those congregations would answer to that Pope. Or they would create a lower level, a diocese or something like that, and then that guy would be a single person in charge of and on the way down. So we understand that structure, right? There is not a corporation in the world that doesn't implement that. There's not a military in the world that doesn't implement that. Okay? If you are an army captain over a company, you have a lot of power over the men in that company. Right? If you've ever been in the military, trust me. They exert a lot of influence over that company of usually 100 people. It used to be what it was. I think it's 90-something now. But anyway. And so that captain answers to a colonel, who is usually the battalion commander. And that battalion commander answers to the brigade. I think that's they've been changing a lot in the last 5 years, 10 years. So I actually have to go back to my World War II and Civil War times to get the structure clear in my mind. But anyway, battalion, brigade, division, on and on and on. And at each level, a brigade manages battalions, and a battalion manages companies, and companies command squads, and they break down in that structure. We understand that. Every corporation in the world implements it, and every military implements it. So we understand it. And the Catholic Church did too. And so what they did was they established priests to lead local, they would call it parish or congregations. And these priests had something different. They had authority. So if Jesus has all authority, he has transferred in this model some authority to the priest. You remember those seven authorities? So we think, oh, no, you're crazy. I'm not crazy. Now I got to remember the baptism, marriage, last rites, confirmation, a few others. And what that means is, if God says that he will save by baptism, then God has the authority, right? But if you say, if it's not done by a priest, the baptism is not legit, then you also need the priest's authority, right? Because without the priest, it's not legit. Christ can do it on his own, but now you need this person. If a marriage is not conducted by a priest, then the marriage is not valid, right? So even though God joins together, without the priest, it can't be done. And so, you need a mic? A model? So you know the answer, right? You just want me to explain it to the class? Okay. I know system engineers, they know what model means. So yes, a model is a structure or a form that has places and functions, things that are done, and usually some sort of purpose or role. And so in this case, a model is, a priest is part of the model, and the priest has a name, priest has a function to execute these sacraments in that congregation. And that priest has authority, and he leads that congregation. And that's the way it's done. And so this idea of a model is a set of groups and relationships between those groups, okay? And so what happens is this, and I now put church at the top. They have ordained authority, and they've passed some of that authority to priests, who priests lead congregations. So now instead of having a group of men, they now have one man, okay? And they do that at all the levels down to the local congregation. And so is that consistent with that? And the answer is, no, actually it's different. Okay? And so the idea that a congregation or even the larger church is led by a group is no longer in place. It's now led by an individual. And so let me tell you what I think the problem is. The first problem I see is if, and back again, is there a right and wrong according to Scripture? I guess technically no. But when I look at every example and understanding and roles and definitions, it's led by plural, multiples. But you know what? We don't like that. So why did the Catholic Church and most every Christian group that's followed maintain this idea of a single leadership? You have control. Control and power. If only those priests can issue legitimate baptism, your ability to go to heaven is now dependent on another man besides Jesus. If you want to live in holy matrimony as opposed to unholy matrimony and be at risk of condemnation, you now not only need God to join together, you need the priest to join together, and the priest now has authority. He has Jesus' authority. If you need last rites or any other act, the speaking and teaching can only come from authorized sources, then guess what? That makes that person powerful. I think it leads to bad things. So, one, it's not consistent with everything I understand. Is it explicitly condemned? No. It's just not consistent. So this is where we go awry. It leads to power center. And I think that that is a great concern to me. And so we... it does lead to consistent message, I give you. But I think that's not necessarily good either. I don't know if I even should do this. I have a Department of the Army Research and Development Achievement Award from 1996. Second Army gave it for what I did in artificial intelligence. Pretty cool, actually. Pretty proud. I built a robot that sat in a Huey helicopter's co-pilot seat and taught itself to fly. Yes, I'm awesome. Okay? And it took it a few days, and it was done on a simulator, because when you're learning, you don't want to learn the hard way by burning up your aircraft when it slams to the ground. But after they worked it out, the computer taught itself how to fly it. And then we took it out off the computer, and we put it into the actual bird, and we flew it. I flew it. I gave it instructions from the command, hover. Something simple like that. It would move into hover. Hover is actually quite difficult to do. Okay? And what I'm saying is we used a process of learning, machine learning. And it builds solutions and solutions of possible answers to how to fly. And it tries them all. Crashes nearly every one of them. But after a while, it learns, and then it takes ones that did better, and they merge and they blend. It's called genetic algorithms. And so what happens in genetic algorithms is with one message and one standard of right and wrong, the thing will converge. It will get good for a while, and then all the answers start looking alike. And when it does, your machine quits learning. Okay? You have to clear it out and start over. And so what happens when you're around one standard, what do you think churches will look like when they're led by one person? I bet you they start looking like that person, right? And then when you get a second generation of that, because they're going to hire somebody just might look like the previous guy, and why do we have churches that are all white and churches that are all black and churches that are all conservative and churches that are all look-alike? We've converged. We've converged. Thanks to that one solid message. And when you converge, you cease to grow. And when you cease to grow, you die. And so I don't know if that was God's motivation. And so there's a goodness to diversity. There's a goodness to multiple views. It keeps one elder from going off the rails, right? And taking everyone along on the foolish ride. Because all you really need is personality, right? If you have a strong personality, people will go along with you until the damage is done. But with multiples, you have that chance to mitigate that. And I think that's good. I do not think the priest-lady model is useful. And I think ultimately it's bad news. So the Catholic Church has implemented it. They implement it very well. But a lot of our others do too. A lot of congregations, churches, and I'm not criticizing them. I'm not. I'm saying it's been implemented. Whether you call that priest, a pastor, or any other sort of role, it's implemented. The churches of Christ have historically rejected that model. But we've implemented it in practicality. Elders, to a great degree, have failed in their responsibilities to actually lead the teaching. They hire someone to lead the teaching, and they sit back and watch. And so those people who are hired are going to do the best they can. Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. And so this eldership does not believe it can abdicate its role to lead and provide the domination, the primary teaching. Not the only teacher. Maybe not even the best teacher, but certainly it's our role. And we do not want to abdicate that role. I am concerned personally about everyone in this room. And everyone in this room is different. And everyone in this room has different places. And they got different concerns and different issues and different strengths and different weaknesses. But you are all of great value. Not because I think so, because God says so. And so my thinking is, how are we going to feed our whole congregation? How are we going to do it? We have a big chunk of this congregation, and we used to have a big chunk that sat right over here where the college kids did. I didn't mean to point you to, guys. That would make you feel awkward there. I was actually looking at the rows right behind you. So, well, okay. And they were all very different too. And they were babies. And babies do silly things. And babies say things about the family at dinner tables they shouldn't say, right? And they tell the neighbors about what mom does when she gets mad, and they make, right? And dad, they say crazy things, right? I'm glad we have babies. They say crazy things. Sometimes they say very good things. But how are we going to feed this whole congregation? And whether I like it or not, and you probably know that I don't, I do not put great emphasis on assembly. I think it's been over-authorized, okay? We have authority in assembly. We rejected this laity model, but we have it. Because only certain people can stand up here on this stage, right? And only certain people can do certain things. And others are not. If they cannot, then that means they aren't authorized. Well, good grief, where do we get authority for these kinds of things? We believe it, but it ain't there. And so I get concerned about the entire thing that we do. And so that is my mind in leadership. Maybe I'm going to wrap up today. We'll go next week with something else. The role of so this is all started as what do I understand my role to be? And in order to understand my role, I have to understand what the church should be. And my role is to get the church there. It's encouraged to get there. We are a family. We are a body. I want to increase the amount of time that we interact and build up each other. This is a great tool. It's a traditional tool with assemblies. There's no way I'm going to wipe it out, though I think in my heart I wish we could. It is here. It's our tradition. It's in place. Let's make the best of it. Let's find ways to use this time to do that. No radical change. No radical change is required. But an emphasis that when we're here, to focus on each other and get less and less concerned about how you like me or don't like me. So if you say, I didn't get anything out of it, my only response is this: did you give anything? If the answer is no, then what can I say? You'll be measured in the end, not by me, not by anyone else, and not by your mama, or your parents, or your children, or the government, or whatever. You're only going to be judged by what God thinks you did with the gifts that He gave you. That's it. So let's use them to encourage and build up each other, and keeping in mind that we have a table with lots of bottles of milk that we need to feed a lot of children. And let's do that. And so what my role is to encourage and strengthen you to do that. And that pretty much is what I've come to my conclusion. I reject this model both in its formality and its informality. And we've adopted it informality. We do not want to do that. So that is the end of that today. 10 o'clock, 10:01. I guess I'm done for the day. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Hope everyone does well. 10 o'clock right now in Indianapolis. You know what they're saying? Gentlemen, start your engines. No.